There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go. With the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. This is another weekend special podcast number 561, and of course, this kind of podcast means only one thing: quality, the pinnacle of interviews. Nasser, introduce this former F1 driver.
Yes, sir. Thank you. This conversation was with Tiago Monteiro from Portugal, of course. And I really enjoyed this conversation. And, of course, his big moment in motor racing was the podium finish by him in the historic 2005 US Grand Prix.
On Bridgestone tires.
Yes, all the finishers were on Bridgestone's tires.
Imagine.
Gee, I wonder why. But anyway, it was great talking to him. Enjoyed talking about his early days. He started racing in Porsche Cup. Actually, he grew up in France. And then kind of late comer to the racing. But when you have pure racing talent, you know, you can catch up to the competition. And some of us will remember he also raced here in Champ Cars. And he is currently driving still and still enjoying with same passion and determination in the World Touring Car Series with Seat, and also has Ocean Racing Technology in GP2, and they just also took on GP3 for the first time this year. So it was great talking to him, and I would like to thank him so much for his time, and also thanks to his PR lady, Miss Rute Vieira, for making this possible. So obrigado to both of them, and hope the listeners enjoy this conversation.
On the line today is Portuguese Grand Prix driver and GP2 team owner Tiago Monteiro. Tiago, welcome to F1 Weekly. How are you today, sir?
I'm very good, thank you.
Great. I hope my first question will put a big smile on your face. June 19, 2005, man from Oporto on podium in Formula Uno. What do you remember most from that wonderful race at Indianapolis?
Wow, yeah, definitely one of the craziest races ever, both for Formula One and for myself. And something, you know, definitely a very weird situation, but it was an opportunity, and I needed to be there to take it, you know. It was such an important moment of my life and career. Some people liked it, some people didn't, but at the end of the day, you have to be there, and when you have an opportunity like this, well, you have to get it. I was still fighting with my opponents, you know, my teammate, the Minardi guys. Those are the guys I was fighting with all year long, you know. But usually we fight for 16, 17, 15 place, and that day we were able to fight for something a lot more important. So it was definitely important to be at the right place at the right time, and I'm glad it happened. So, yeah, it was a very important day, definitely.
I was there, and I will never forget how excited you were when you got out of your car. Were you aware when you got in your Jordan that Michelin cars will not race?
No. We were aware that some of the guys from Michelin might not race, some of the teams, or they would race, but they could stop at the pits, or they could maybe race, but by you know, going through the pits every lap. There was many stories, many rumors all over the paddock. So we knew that there could be a chance of doing something good, you know, scoring some points, have a good finish result. But we never expected that they would all of them stop. Never. Therefore, it was a big surprise when, on our way to the grid, we see all the cars in front of us going to the pit lane. And then I realized, oh my God, this is a lot more important and a lot more crazy than we expected. And the stakes are very, very high. So I definitely needed to finish in front of my opponents. That was the opportunity I needed to take, the most important one.
Great. Now, did you send some fine Oporto vino to Pierre de Pasquier?
No, I sent him a replica of my trophy.
Okay, that's good. Okay, your team owner, Mr. Jordan, has a very nice vocabulary. What was his reaction, and how did you find him as a team owner? Obviously, very different from Trevor Carlin, I would imagine.
Eddie Jordan was only there for a few months when I joined the team. He was actually not in the USA when this happened. So, of course, he was excited. Of course, it was an interesting moment for him as well, but he was not there. And he was not part of the team anymore at that time.
Okay, good. Moving forward to 2012 season, you have Nigel Melker from Netherlands in your GP2, and he has quite a bit of experience and success. What are your expectations from him and his teammate?
Well, Nigel is one of the most promising talents at the moment. You know, still a young guy, 20 years old, with already quite a good experience for sure. Not so much in GP2 yet, but in other series. And, you know, really fast, really clever, really hard worker. So we're very excited and very happy to have him on board. We did some good testing the last few days in Jerez. Now we're going to Barcelona next week. And we're trying to prepare him as best as possible for the beginning of the season. So when you have rookies on board, GP2 is such a tough competitive championship that it's always difficult, but we need to prepare them as much as possible and give them the most confidence, as much confidence as possible.
Okay, your team cars, they have a very nice blue paint scheme, blue and black. A question I have, your team is called Ocean Racing Technology. Is that because you're located near the sea or because of the Portuguese passion for high seas?
No, it's a little bit of a mix. We were looking at the name. I was never a big fan of having my name as a team name, you know, like some other people do. I mean, I got no problem about it. You know, Jordan does it, did it, Williams, Carlin as well. But I don't
Ferrari
know.
Also.
Ferrari also, of course. But I never really saw that way. And I always thought that if one day I had a team, I didn't really want it to call my name. Well, that's just a personal decision. And then we were looking with our PR company, you know, we're looking at the different names, and I wanted something a bit different as well and stuff. And then when you look at the Portuguese story, we know we conquered the world a long time ago by the ocean, basically. We were very strong on the ocean, and we are still in front of the ocean, obviously. And so there was many reasons why we wanted to be called Ocean. And, you know, we conquered a lot of countries 60, 100 years ago. We also want to conquer the racing world right now. So that was the reason behind it, basically.
Well, very good name. I like that. And
thanks.
Among the talent you have seen in GP2 past few seasons, who has impressed you among the drivers?
Not easy, but I think definitely Nigel Melker is very impressive. Antonio Felix da Costa was very impressive. Alvaro Parente, Brandon Hartley, very impressive. All of them, when you sign them, is because you think they are good, right? So I like all of them. Some we had better experiences than others, for sure. That's life, that's racing. But all the guys that I signed for my team, it was guys that I trusted and I believed they could do a good job.
Now, you mentioned you had some experiences that were good, some were not so good. Since you have brought this up, let me ask you a question. When you have an experience which is not good, I'm sure it's more than just not good results, maybe how the driver behaves or how he trusts the team or does not trust the team. What is the normal situation you find yourself where you say, this to yourself that this is not a good experiment or a good experience?
I'm not sure I really understand the question. The
question is, the question basically is, if there's an experience with some driver that's not good experience, why is that? What do they do? What do they don't do that it's not?
Well, there can be many things. I mean, we could be at fault because, I mean, every team has a mentality, has a structure, has an experience, right? And some drivers just don't fit with that. Sometimes it happens. So the feeling, the relationship doesn't work out, for example. Then you can also have a driver that doesn't suit the driving style of our car. You know, every team has a kind of a setup, and some drivers can use it and be very fast right away. Some very good drivers don't like it, and they can't be fast with it. So that's another reason why sometimes things don't go well. And then sometimes you have drivers that that they arrive to GP2 and they think they already know everything, you know, and they never put themselves into a question. And they think that if they arrive here, it's because they're good and they know, and they don't realize that they're still very young and very raw talent. You know, and they still need to work, even when you reach Formula One. And that's, you know, that's what I try to explain to them, that even a Sebastian Vettel, even an Alonso, even a Hamilton, all those guys are still learning. Every day they learn. Every day they put themselves on the spot and they try to evolve. They try to question mark everything that they do to try to evolve. If you stop doing that, well, the other guys are going to go faster than you, and they're going to be better than you. And whether you are in GP2, in Formula One, in go-kart, that's the most important thing. First, you need to put yourself into question. And then when you've done that, which is never ends really, then you can start asking all the questions. But it's very important to be to accept that no matter how good you are, you can always improve somewhere. You always need to learn more, and you always need to be a better driver in general, total.
Yeah, that's the same in racing and also in life, always room to learn.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, now two drivers I want to name. They are from this side of the pond. One of them raced with you. How would you rate these two drivers, Alexander Rossi, who had done some races with you, and Esteban Gutierrez of Mexico?
Okay. Well, obviously for Alex Rossi, I can say that, you know, as you said, he raced for us. He's a brilliant, brilliant guy, very clever, very fast, very motivated, good mentality with the team. He's one of the top guys out there, you know. I wish he had the good opportunities because he really deserves it. He's a hard worker. He improved a lot as a driver, physically, mentally. You know, he's one of the true professionals that I know for his young generation, basically. Esteban, I know him, obviously, and I spoke to him many times, and he's in a team that I know very well, which is ART. But I've never worked with him, so he's obviously a great talent. There's no doubt about it. A lot of speed in him. But I cannot say anything about his personality or anything because, like I said, I've never worked with him directly.
Okay, great. Now we have some questions about Thiago Monteiro, the race car driver. The 1997 French Porsche Carrera Cup was your first foray into racing. Was the lack of karting or junior-level single-seater experience a problem for you?
Yes, I can say it was an issue. Sure, when you compare, you know, when you had no experience in motorsports, no matter how much talent you have to start with, you're always gonna struggle against some guys that have already done like 5, 6, 10 years experience. You know, that's no doubt about it. So I can say I was lucky to be fast from the beginning, but I was lacking a lot of things. I was lacking racing craft. I was lacking mentality in terms of managing the races, managing the overtakings. I had no idea what we were talking about. So it was very tough initially, for sure. But things went quite well, so I cannot complain too much. But it was definitely a harder step for me as a driver to start that late and to start in a series with so many professional guys already.
And Jacko, since you started late, was it because there was no interest in your family in motorsports, or were you involved in some other sporting activities?
There was those two things. Although my father was a big fan of motorsports, he himself raced a long time ago. I wasn't even born. But he was a very busy man. He was working hard and working even on weekends. And so he had no time to take me to go-karts or whatsoever. And I didn't have, I was living in France at the time. We had no other family there. So I didn't have an uncle or a cousin or whoever that could take me to go-karts, you know, like sometimes happens. So I didn't have any other opportunities. And that's it. That's one of the reasons. So I never really realized that I liked that so much and I had the talent for that. So I was a lot more into motorbikes, actually, which was easier, you know, for me. I could take my motocross and leave home and go somewhere in a park or in a forest or whatever and just have fun. But go-karts was a lot harder for me to get and to reach. You know.
Okay.
And then the other reason that I started to study hotel management, and there was no way my father was going to help me towards motorsports or put me in contact or whatever until I finished my degree. So that's why another reason why it took so long.
Okay. Now, you won five races. Were you surprised being Rookie of the Year?
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. It was nobody expected it. Neither I, to be honest, because I didn't know what to expect. To be honest, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what to overtake. I didn't know how to qualify. But things in the end went quite well. It took a few races to start, but after a few races, I was in the rhythm and I was strong enough to fight for the good points, races, podiums, etc.
Now, following year 1998, you raced again in France, and this time you were Rookie of the Year in Formula 3. At this stage of your career, what did you enjoy more, single-seaters or tin-tops, or what were your goals and hopes because you were just winning right off the bat?
I like both, actually. A few people asked me that, but I never know really what to expect. I don't know how to explain. It's such a different world, you know, single seaters or prototypes or team tops. It's very different, and I have fun in both of them. You know, I really enjoy myself in both of them. I could not say which one I prefer. Maybe Formula One is different because it's the extreme power, extreme efficiency, extreme technology. You can't compare to anything else, but if you take even a champ car or another strong series in single seaters, I cannot say which one I prefer the most. If it's touring cars, GTs, or single seaters, as long as there's four tires, a steering wheel, lots of power, and goes fast, I'm happy.
Great. Now, following season 1999, you raced at Le Mans. How was that experience, and what's it like going at Mulsanne flat out after midnight?
It's impressive. It's really incredible. Very hard to explain, but that's why Le Mans is such an amazing experience, human experience, but also personal experience that I love. And one of the reasons is that You have so many crazy moments, you know, and be so fast at night in Lausanne, all those S Porsches and all these areas there. I really love it. It's a very strong feeling for sure.
Yeah, in the year 2000, you were second in the French Formula 3 with four wins. What were the high points and memorable races for you from that season?
Well, I think my time in Formula 3 was a very strong learning process for single seaters. I didn't do any single seaters before doing Formula 3. Therefore, I had to learn everything already in Formula 3. So I enjoyed my time there. I had a great time, won many races. But the most important one that I won was definitely Spa in the British Championship. We were in the French Championship. We just did one off event in Belgium, in Spa, but it was part of the British Championship with all the guys like Button, Carty Cayenne, Pidonia, Bernoulli, all those guys were there. And we arrived there from the French Championship, different tires, and I won the race. So it was really one of the most important races I've won for sure in my career. And then, of course, second in Korea with Carty Cayenne. It was also important, and winning in pole, winning some races were important, but I can't, yeah. If I have to pinpoint one, I would say Spa.
Yeah, very, yeah, that's the place to win.
Yeah.
Okay, in 2002, you tested a Formula One machine for the first time. Was that the most exciting racing experience you've had at that time, by that time? You tested the first time you tested a Formula One machine. Was that the most exciting racing experience by then?
Wow, yeah. It was definitely one of the most impressive moments of my career. 2002 Barcelona with the Renault team. I was still young. Really, it was an amazing moment of my life. I loved it. I took the best of it, you know, and I will never forget that moment for sure.
Now, you were also part of the Renault Driver Development Program. How did that deal come about? And I sure would like to get your comments on Signor Flavio Briatore.
It was a great opportunity for me. Again, I've learned a lot with all of them, personally, physically, mentally. I've learned a lot. I evolved a lot as a driver. And I will never forget the fact that they gave me my first F1 opportunity. And Mr. Briatore was always a strong help there, a strong motivator. As you know, he has his own way of dealing with things. You know, you can either like it or not, but he's definitely a motivator and a hard worker.
So your experience with him was positive?
Okay,
that's good. In 2004, you were second only to Heikki Kovalainen in World Series by Renault. Now we are in a very different financial situation, but back then, how much financial support you had from Portuguese companies to break into Formula One and keep on going with your racing career?
Quite strong, actually. The whole country was behind me, you know. The whole government, the whole several national companies were behind me. I was very fortunate to have this support. You know, my career exploded in basically in 2002, yes, with that first F1 test, and then Champ Car, and then a great season in the World Series in 2004. And everything came into play. There was a good timing for everything. The great results with Trevor Carlin, and then he moved to Jordan. Therefore, I had those opportunities. And I have to say, it's very difficult to replicate that because, you know, you have to be at the right time, at the right moment, at the right place. And that only happens once in a lifetime, for sure.
Okay. Your country has also produced other racing talent like Felipe Albuquerque, Alvaro Parent, and Antonio Felix da Costa. Based on your experience, both as a successful driver and now team owner, what is the missing link or what can be done so this kind of talent can get into and succeed in Formula One?
Well, they have to do a very good work on track. There's no doubt about it. They have to keep up the good work they're doing on track. And then the management behind them have to do a good work behind the doors, you know, behind the racing, basically, you know. You have to have the right contacts, the right people behind you, and know the right people. So it's not easy, the actual economic situation of Europe and Portugal is very critical. So the times are tough. It's never been easy, but I think it's definitely harder right now.
Okay, great. Now, you have raced here in the U.S. also, starting from pole position in the Lamborghini Super Trophy at Laguna Seca. What was your impression of this track, especially the corkscrew? And we are not too far from this track, by the way.
I mean, I loved it. It was my first time there. Pole position with the Lamborghini was a great experience. The track is just wonderful. It has so much history, you know. I've heard about it so much. I've seen it on TV so much that when you get there, you know, it's so different, so specific with this corkscrew and many other places. So I loved it. It was an amazing experience. I loved that race. I loved that track. Then I went there again in Chemcar. It was really, really good. So, played that I really liked.
Yeah, you mentioned Chemcar where you raced in 2003. You had pole for the Mexican race. What were other highs and lows of the season for you, and how did you get into Champ Cars? What was behind this?
Well, first, how I got there was really because Chris Pook at the time, the president of the series, was looking to come into Europe, right? And he was looking to come into different places like Portugal and England, Germany and stuff. And he was looking for some young European drivers to bring over there. And we got in touch by some common friends or common people that we knew. And he invited me to go and see one or two races, which I did. And very quickly, we came to a great deal. You know, he had some budget where he could help some young drivers. And he did help me and Darren Manning at the time, if you remember. And then there was also a good coincidence that Emerson Fittipaldi was putting up this new team, and you know, we also met and we got along very quickly. And in 2 weeks, basically, the deal was done. So it was a very, very good situation. That's basically how it happened.
And who were the drivers?
Oh yeah, but the other part of the question was. Best moments were definitely, of course, pole position in Mexico was amazing, but I led a few races and actually led my first race in San Pedro.
Okay, great. So you were telling me about the highlights of the Champ Car career here in 2003?
Yes. So then I was saying that even though we only had the off-a-day testing for the first race, I was still able to lead on the first race of my career in Champ Car, which was a great experience. Pole position was also a great experience there, and I had a lot of great moments. A tough year, obviously, with a very small team, very limited funding, but in the end, I really love it.
And what drivers in Champ Cars impressed you?
Bourdais was obviously very strong at the time. I knew him very well. He had been my teammate in the past, but he was very strong with Newman at the time. And then, I don't know, Paul Tracy was great, very strong also, you know. Those two were strong.
you mentioned two very interesting names, and they were, you know, at each other's throat. Whose side were you on, Bourdais or Tracy?
None. I'm friends with both, and so I was with both of them.
Okay, great. Now, you know, I enjoy watching you driving a Seat in the World Touring Car Championship. Now that you are a team owner and also racing, is the desire, passion, and the will to win is the same as when you first started in the Porsche Cup?
Oh, it's more than ever. You know, every time you grow, every time you go up in your career, you want more and more, and that's what I really do want. I really do want more and more wins and results. So I fight harder for everything, and I think I'm a lot more thirsty for win and for results than I was back then. You know, I'm a lot more aggressive, a lot more demanding with everything, more professional. So yeah, definitely more than other time.
And in your racing life, what is your favorite track, and what city do you enjoy visiting most?
My favorite track would have to be Spa, Laguna Seca, maybe also, and Macau.
Oh, interesting. Okay, now, your thoughts on the new F1 cars. Most of them are calling them ugly. How do you like the design of new cars, and what do you think will happen in Albert Park?
That's a very difficult one to say, to be honest. I'm struggling to read into the testing times, which is impossible. Right now, I haven't had really a strong opinion on how things are going to happen. Yeah, for sure, the design is not very nice. The cars are getting, uglier and uglier, actually. But that's life, you know. You get used to it every time anyway.
Yeah.
But in terms of who's going to be stronger, I'm sure McLaren will be strong. I'm sure Red Bull and Ferrari will be strong still. But it seems to be a lot of competition out there. So,
Yeah, and going back to your series GP2, I'm sure you would like to see Melker or the other driver win. Who do you think will be GP2 champion this year?
It has to go, probably, most certainly will go to one of the most experienced guys, you know. I mean, you got Bartek with 4 years. You got Van der Garde with 4 or 5 years. You got Kloos. You got Laimer, Kral, they already had 3 years. All those guys have such a huge experience that they're going to be strong contenders. So I would go for one of those.
Great. Now, Tiago, really appreciate your time. Finally, will you please tell our listeners, we have listeners all over the world, including your country, a little bit about Tiago Monteiro, the man, not the driver and team owner. What kind of music do you like? What's your taste in food and, you know, stuff like that?
I'm a very easygoing person, you know. I like most of the regular things, you know. I like extreme sports. I like regular sports. I don't like football. I like all kind of music. Depends on what kind of mood I am in, you know, from classical to hard rock to techno to pop to everything. You know, depends on what kind of mood I am. You know, I'm a family man. I love my kids. I love my wife, and I like to travel. I'm not too complicated, I think. I love my fans, which are great, and live without them for sure.
Well, that's very nice. And talking of family, if I may ask, your kids, are they showing any interest in motorsports?
Yeah. Well, they're 4 and 2, but both of them are very keen, and they love cars and they love motorsports, and they love sports in general, skateboarding and bicycle, all this.
Great. Okay, Tiago, thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
And
thank
have
you.
A pleasant evening.
All right. Thank you. You too. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye. Ciao.
Bye-bye.
Diego, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.